Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Lift the burden of getting a home loan with Rocket Mortgage and get a secure, transparent home loan approval in minutes. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint.
From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. In the market for a new home? Good luck. This spring, buyers are facing an ugly real estate reality. Record low inventories coupled with soaring prices and rising interest rates. And there is no thaw in sight. Across the country, packed open houses, bidding wars, and multiple offers way above asking. It is the new norm. This hour on Point, facing the deep freeze of the spring real estate market. You can join us on air or online. Are you in the market for a new home? How's it going? Tell us what's out there. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at OnPoint Radio. Joining me from New York City is Laura Cosisto, a real estate reporter for The Wall Street Journal. She wrote a terrific piece yesterday about the spring housing market titled Property Buyers Face Hard Spring. You can link to it at our website, onpointradio.org. Laura, great to have you. Welcome to On Point.
Yeah, thank you so much.
So what a picture. Give us your headline here for this spring real estate market.
Well, so like most people, as soon as the weather starts to get nice, I start to go on Zillow, go on my local real estate website and check what's out there. And the answer this spring is not much. Inventory is near its lowest levels in 20 years. We're seeing not a lot of new construction. We're seeing prices rise, mortgage rates rise. It's just a very, very tough market, the toughest since the last housing boom in 2006.
So talk more about the factors that are driving this. Rising mortgage rates, declining inventory. I mean, what's behind all this?
Yeah. So, I mean, the big culprit here is really inventory. So what's happened is we've had this really kind of screwed up housing recovery. What's happened is demand has bounced back. You know, obviously, we had an extraordinary drop in 2007, 2008. But demand is coming back. Wages are good. Job growth is good. We're seeing people starting to get into their 30s. These millennials who everyone's talking about actually do want to buy homes. But what hasn't been keeping up is supply. We're seeing new levels of new home construction that are basically on par with what we usually see in recessions. And then that sort of combining with the fact that other people who are a little bit older are just not putting their homes in the market, and it's just making for a very, very tight market.
So you mentioned the millennials. Are they the most affected here? I mean, are these millennials trying to get out of their parents' basement? Are these retirees looking to downsize? I mean, who's most affected here?
So obviously, you're always in the toughest position if you're just looking to get into the market.
Right. First time buyers.
If you already own your home, the fact that prices are rising, the fact that there's bidding wars, the fact you can sell your home in 3 hours, that's great. Although, of course, it's a little trickier if you have to go then buy another home. But the people who are in the toughest position are definitely those younger buyers. And that's also because rents have been rising really quickly. Rents have risen about 25% over the last 5 years. So it's really tough for them to save for a down payment. A lot of them want to get out of the rental market. They want some stability, but it's just a really tough time to do that.
You write that it's not just hotspots like Seattle and Denver that are seeing a scarce supply of homes for sale. It's across the country. Minneapolis, Cleveland, Nashville, Tampa, Louisville. Here's a millennial, Emily Leach, on CNBC. She's in California. She's been hunting for a house for several months, but hasn't been able to find anything she can afford.
We actually had a house that we saw that we really liked in South Central Los Angeles, and we tried to make a move on that, and we got outbid. South Central.
Truly a nationwide phenomenon, Laura?
Oh, yeah, for sure. So I looked a lot at Minneapolis in my piece and talked to this woman who is 41 weeks pregnant and she's still out looking because they're just that determined to get a home. But there's just sort of seems to be nothing out there. And really, it's happening across the country, especially in cities, because we are seeing young people want to move to cities, wanting to stay in cities, wanting to buy homes in cities, but just not seeing new construction there. And so it's really across the board that people are struggling.
You mentioned Minneapolis. Let's go there. Surprisingly hot market. Here's Cottie Lowry, president of the Minneapolis Area Association of Realtors, also a realtor at Keller Williams. Hi, Cottie. Welcome to On Point. Great to have you.
Oh, thanks, Jane. Hi, and hi to Laura, too.
So
hi.
What a market, Cottie. Tell us what you're seeing there in Minneapolis.
Well, let me just make a birth announcement. The lady that had was 41 weeks pregnant finally gave up and had the baby on Sunday.
She got the baby, but she didn't get a house, right? She needs a house. Help this woman.
But she says she's going to be out next week looking again, so that says a lot for young, for the millennial generation and how fast they bounce back, doesn't it?
Right.
Yeah, it's an extraordinarily hot market here. Our inventory levels are down around 2003 levels, as close as we can tell. We've got about, let me just put it in context. I'm talking about the entire Twin Cities here, not just Minneapolis.
Okay.
So the Twin Cities metro area, it's about 3.5 million people. We've got about 1.6 million homes or housing units. So out of that many housing units, we only have about 10,000 for sale right now. Last year we had about 12,000 this time of year, and the year before that about 14,000. So we're just seeing a continued drop in inventory, which really makes it, you know, great if you're a seller, but every seller becomes a buyer generally.
Exactly.
And so it's not the greatest story for sellers either. It's pretty good.
So
it's certainly, as you said, it's not so great for buyers.
Give us an example of what this looks like on the ground, what realtors and their clients are coming up against in your area.
Well, with multiple offers, sort of two sides of it. The to go out to an open house now, you almost need police escorts or police to direct traffic. And interestingly, it's not only in the low end. Our low end has very little inventory, and one would expect lots of activity there. But we're seeing, you know, 50, 60 people line up to get into a $600,000 or $700,000 home in the in the inner suburbs. And that we haven't seen that before. That's a big change. We saw this kind of thing happening the last couple of years, maybe not 50 people, but people waiting in line at low-end homes, say under $200,000, $300,000. But now to see this kind of activity in the high end is kind of astonishing for Sunday open houses.
And are buyers putting down 10%, 20% more? What are you seeing?
Well, it depends on the kind of financing. The younger buyer, the first-time buyer, millennial buyer, will do as little as 3.5% down and go FHA typically. About 15% of our sales are cash, so that means 85% have financing. And the more experienced buyers, the older buyers that are downsizing, you know, they might pay 50% down. So it just depends on the price, or I guess I'd say that depends on the age of the buyer and their point in their buying cycle of their lives.
And, Cottie, it's not uncommon for homes to sell way above asking price, right?
Yeah. Here's an example. I was trying to show one of my own clients a two-unit little duplex about 3 weeks ago. We thought we were going to be the first ones in. When we got there, there were six other agents waiting, and there ultimately were 16 offers on the property. I don't know what it sold for, but I've talked to other agents that have been through the entire cycle, and they're offering 10 to 15% over the asking price. And their clients, the buyers, are sometimes putting a clause in the purchase agreement that says, if this property doesn't appraise, we will make up the difference. So that's been the problem in the past. The appraisals would kind of kick some of these out. But they're kind of going around that problem now.
So do sellers feel the need to upgrade appliances before they sell, put a fresh coat of paint, or are these homes just kind of going as they are, snapping up regardless of what they look like?
Well, cleanliness is next to godliness when it comes to selling a property. I always recommend spending a lot of time preparing. That whole idea of just throwing something on the market just still doesn't work.
Even in this market, Cottie?
Well, it's a function of price. If you want to leave money on the table, then don't fix your house up.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to don't want to maximize dollar and you know, if you go out and do the work yourself or have it done, the return on investment is really high because it doesn't take that much to get a home in perfect condition or really good marketing condition.
I've already got a dashboard full of calls here. Let's get Travis in here from Nashville, Tennessee. Hi, Travis. You're on the air. Welcome to On Point.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, you bet. Go ahead.
My wife and I are in a suburb of Nashville, Tennessee, which mm-hmm. is a very hot market.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of like a game of musical chairs here. Like, you just got to grab a chair if you want a house before the music ends. Mm-hmm. And we're kind of stuck in a house that we don't love, but we're stuck because the prices are just crazy out here.
Travis, thank you. Thanks very much for the call and good luck. Tina's in Cedar Rapids, Iowa. Hi, Tina. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. We bought our current house 5 years ago at $217,000, and we bought it right. We sold the previous house, a smaller house, and moved into a larger house because I felt like the market was just about to turn, and it was too pricey for us. We had two mortgages, and one of the mortgages, the second mortgage, was a 10-year balloon that was amortized to 30 years. So mm-hmm. we knew we had to refinance within that 10 years.
Mm.
Last summer, our neighbors sold their house for so much money, I said, now is the time that we refinance. So our $217,000 house from 5 years ago appraised at $250,000 last fall.
Wow.
And we were able to get a single mortgage that was about 1.25% lower interest rate.
Mm.
So this market has been great for us.
Great for some. Tina, thank you so much for the call. Laura Casisto, great for some and much harder for others.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and there are lots of stories. I mean, those stories that kind of kill you, where I remember I talked to a guy in Chicago, and he bought in maybe 2010 and basically sold he had bought a multifamily property and sold it for so much he didn't really even have to work anymore. He could just write his book and pursue his dreams. And so, I mean, there are those stories. If you can find a place to go, if you can sell and find a place to go, we shouldn't forget that. I mean, if you're trying to retire, move into a retirement home, and suddenly you can make this windfall on the fact that prices have gone up by, 25%. That's fantastic.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking this hour about the brutal spring real estate market where low inventory is driving prices through the roof. And you can join the conversation. Sellers, has your house been snapped up yet? Do you have to now buy yourself? Renters, what does your market look like? Can you save enough for a down payment? Here's a BuzzFeed video from earlier this year where comedian Kelsey Dara goes house hunting with her mom, a real estate agent in Tampa, Florida, where the market isn't quite as hot.
I wanted to show you the entry-level pricing for you. This house is $210,000.
Big.
Yeah, it's
big
a good
house.
It's a really good size home. This one is 3-bedroom, 2.5-bath.
Wow.
Almost 1,800 square feet. This is $210,000. I think maybe you can get this for
$200,000. Okay.
Because around here, you can negotiate. In California, you not so much.
Well, here's HGTV, the show Property Brothers. Sarah and Scott here are looking for a new home in their ideal neighborhood. The brothers show them the perfect place. It had everything they wanted except a good list price.
It just feels so big.
It's huge.
Yeah.
You literally have everything on your wish list in this house. All it comes down to now is the list price. This property is listed for $990,000.
What?
Yeah, that's...
You're lucky he's between us, because I want to get to you. I can't believe you showed us this.
You can get a 100-year mortgage.
I love this house.
With me this hour, Wall Street Journal real estate reporter Laura Casisto. Laura, you talk about in your piece how builders these days are being more conservative. Why and how is that contributing to this incredibly tight market?
Yeah, so it won't surprise anyone that builders were burned pretty badly during the last crash. A number of them, especially smaller ones, went out of business altogether. And those who are still building are just being much more conservative. They're not building those starter homes way far out in the suburbs that they used to, because that's sort of the first stuff that takes a hit when the economy takes a turn. But of course, that's also the stuff that's affordable for first-time buyers. And in fairness to them, banks are also not lending them money to build those kinds of homes. And then on top of that, we also lost a lot of construction laborers during the crash. A lot of people went and found new jobs in different industries, and they haven't come back. Construction's a pretty tough industry to be in. It's very cyclical. And so the combination of those things means that kind of traditional supply dynamic mechanism, where the fact that demand is going up should mean that builders would be way ramping up production, just hasn't played played out that way. We're seeing a kind of very slow build, but nothing even remotely close to what demand is.
Lot of listener response here from our website. One says, another level of crunch in the system, along with hard-to-find affordable health care, education, decent time off for vacation, family care. Now this, not good. If one doesn't have a toehold, says Jason, in the housing market, getting in is near impossible for moderate-income people without an outside source of funding. Laura, I mean, that's basically the nut of this story, right?
Yeah, I mean, and I think that's the more serious side of this, that we see if you didn't get into the market 5 years ago, right, and you're just sort of a typical middle income household, it's really tough for you. And we've made some legitimately important changes to the way that we do mortgages. We've made it much, much more difficult for people to get credit. And there's good reasons for that. We gave away mortgages far too easily during the last boom. But what it's meant is that now we're just making it very difficult for middle class people to build equity, save for retirement, do all the things, get all the benefits that homeownership offers. And instead, they're sort of stuck in this rental market where they're not building equity. And that, I think, is going to be a real long-term challenge and is a policy challenge.
Let's get Eric in here from Boston, Massachusetts. Hi, Eric. You're on the air. Welcome to On Point.
Yeah. Hi, Jane. Thanks so much for taking my call. First off, thank you guys so much because this is such a timely topic. My wife and I are both in our early 30s. We have an infant daughter, and we moved out of an apartment here in the Boston area and moved in with my in-laws a couple years ago. So that we could save for a house. Because as you mentioned, there's really no way to save unless you have either an outside source or, sort of a really good paying job. My wife and I work pretty good jobs, but we have student debt. And so as a result, we actually sort of fall into this weird gray area where we don't qualify for first-time homebuyer programs because we make too much, but
right,
we have too much student debt to be able to really save a sort of significant amount of money. And so we've gotten to the point now after a couple of years where we have probably in the range of about 10 to 15% of a down payment saved. But now houses are going so quickly and so far over market value that it's making it really hard to find something that we can actually afford that isn't going to be a complete sort of renovation project.
So are you giving up, Eric? What's your strategy moving forward?
Well, we're definitely not giving up. We
want to get out of the basement, right?
Well, in this case, the attic.
The attic. Okay. All right.
We are really working hard to try and figure out, what is it that's really important to us?
Mm-hmm.
We really are focused on places that have good public school districts, and we're fortunate enough in Massachusetts that that's pretty much everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
But we're really having to compromise on the size of the house and the location. Right now, we commute into Boston by about, it takes us about an hour and 15 minutes, and we're only about 40 miles door to door. So it's a long haul coming in and out of work every day. So we're having to compromise, and we're looking at houses possibly even slightly further away from where we work right now in order to be able to afford it. So I guess one of the questions I'd sort of have is, are there any sort of tips or tricks for those of us that may fall into this weird kind of gap where we have, student loan debt that we're trying to deal with, we're trying to save for retirement, but we're also trying to get into this housing market.
And you have good jobs and you're making good money, both of you. Eric, thank you so much. Laura Cosisto, what do you say?
Oh, man, I wish I knew the secret. I think it's what he said. It's trying to sit down, I think, and make a list and say, what can we live without? Because I just think you're probably not going to get it all. And I'd also love to tell you that if you wait until next year, it will be better. But I said that to people last year, and I was wrong. This year was worse. So I don't mean to be the bearer of bad news. I do think it might get better. I do think we might see builders ramp up supply, and that might ease a bit of the pressure. But I just don't know. So yeah, I think exactly what he says he's doing. Just sit down and say, well, schools are like the number one thing for us, and we're willing to squeeze into this 1,000-square-foot house in order to do that, and then make that happen. I think that's going to be your best bet.
Let me bring in from Philadelphia, Susan Wachter, professor of real estate and finance at the Wharton School, the University of Pennsylvania, and co-director of the Penn Institute for Urban Research. Welcome back to On Point, Susan. Great to have you.
Thank you, Jane.
So you just heard Eric there. He and his wife living in the in-laws' attic, right? They make good money. They both work. But they've got a lot of student debt, looking farther and farther outside of Boston because they just can't find a place. What do you see in Eric's story and more broadly?
Well, unfortunately, Eric's family could be poster children for the situation that many young households are facing today in markets where there are jobs. So good news, Boston has a great job market. Wages have increased. The technology sector is going strong. But house prices reflect the strength of that market. And unfortunately, the answer of driving farther out, commuting, mm-hmm. is what we see happening in these hot markets, or remaining renters. That, too, is the unfortunate outcome, because rents are going up. Rents are going up even faster than house prices. Makes it difficult to save for that down payment.
So give us a sense of how the broader economy is impacting this difficult, hot, whatever side you're on, real estate market.
Well, it's really hard for everyone, because even if you have your home, you own your home, you may want to sell it. And although you can sell it, no problem, where are you going to live?
Right.
What are you
going to still got to buy. Yep.
Where are you going to buy?
Yep.
And that's part of the sort of catch-22 of why inventories are down. They're down because that problem. We heard from one caller, they'd love to move. They'd love to move up. They'd love to trade up. But they can't find that affordable trade-up house. Therefore, they're not putting their more affordable house on the market. That's slowing down across the board, the inventory growth, and it's the inventory that keeps prices rising. This is a national trend. Now, before we go to kind of historic, how high, in fact, are they higher? No, housing prices are not higher than they have ever been. In fact, housing prices are still beneath the peak of 2006, both in nominal terms and inflation-adjusted terms.
Mm-hmm.
But for folks who've been in the market, perhaps have started looking for homes over the last 5 years, perhaps graduated with debt or without, for the last 5 years, we've been on a historic run. Housing prices have increased, boy, more than 5%, far more than inflation, far more than wages for 5 years in a row.
Which lends the question, are we in or approaching a bubble here? What do you see?
Well, we're not in a bubble in a sense that the fundamentals are supporting these high house prices. The fundamentals are job growth is back, wages are back, we have low interest rates, we have not historic lows in mortgage rates, but extremely low mortgage rates. So with interest rates where they are now, we're not in bubble territory. Mm. House prices reflect overall scarcity, rents are high. The normal ratios between house prices and rents are in place. It's just that both rents and house prices are high relative to incomes. And that's new. That's really different than where we were in 2006. In 2006, we were clearly in bubble territory. Housing prices far exceeded what they should have been relative to rents, relative to incomes. But today, unfortunately, both rents and house prices are high. This is difficult. If you want to move out of your parents' home, if you've got that job, if you want to move to where that job is, but you can't find affordable housing or rental opportunities, there's your problem.
Right. Let's get Molly in here, down in Tampa. Hi, Molly. Glad you called. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, go ahead.
I just kind of want to talk about our experience. We sold our house in a day, and we're moving to Fort Myers, and we're struggling as buyers down there, even though we've sold our house for three times what we bought it for. So we have a substantially larger down payment, and the market is so strong that we're finding house prices that are now three times higher than when we got into the market, maybe even four or five.
Did you sell your house over asking price?
We did, yeah, for about 20% over asking price.
Wow. All right, Molly, thank you. Good luck to you on your move. Here's Danny in Wells, Vermont. Hi, Danny, you're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for having me. I'm calling because I looked at looking for a house in a whole different perspective. I have been building my own tiny house over the past year, and I'm living on land that people are just letting me live here. I am doing work for them every once in a while, trying to help them out. They're an older couple, very nice, and mm-hmm. I'm grateful to have that. Yep. And I just think it's a different way of looking at your options of owning a home, because I'll be coming in at probably under $15,000 when it's all said and done, and I can move my house. It's on a trailer, and I can have any view that I want, can move to any part of the country I want.
Yeah, those tiny houses are great and sure affects the mortgage. There's Danny. Susan walked her in a tiny home, not for everyone, but certainly an option in a very difficult market. What would you say about the foreclosure crisis and rentals? I mean, I'm reading here that the foreclosure crisis left behind an entirely new landscape of potential buyers because investors bought so many entry-level homes, tens of thousands of them, during the financial crisis or after, and turned them into rentals.
Yeah, let me just comment on Danny, which is, I just have this image of this lovely house in the forest of, I guess you said, Vermont.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Okay.
And where the solution is that he's found is he's not paying for the land. And it's the land costs that have dramatically increased. And that's what's being reflected in rent prices and house prices in the markets where the jobs are, particularly. So there are actually some markets where house prices and rents and lands are falling, but they're where jobs are few and far between, and so, you know, we're not moving to those places. Where we're moving, Seattle, Oregon, Texas, we've seen tremendous job growth, but also tremendous house price increases. You know, the foreclosure crisis, it was obviously really historic dimensions and was disastrous for individual families. We lost 5 million plus homes through the foreclosure. Owned homes were lost in that period. The people who owned are often back now, or rental, or maybe back in owner-occupied housing at this point. The homes that they left were some, not many. It's really exaggerated to view the these 5 million homes going into investment rental.
Where did they go then? Where did they go, Susan?
Well, they were, in time, they're reoccupied, resold to as fixer-uppers, perhaps, to new homeowners. A percentage of them did get fixed up and put into the single-family rental market. That's a very, very small percentage of the overall rental market and a very small percentage of the overall housing market in the U.S. today. Mm.
Laura, the number of young households that is renting is significantly higher, is it not?
For sure. If you look at the homeownership rate in general is down, and particularly the homeownership rate among younger households is down even more. And for some of the reasons that callers have touched on, there's some debate around this, but it seems at least anecdotally to be student debt seems to be a factor. Rising rent seems to be a factor, and the difficulty of saving for a down payment. And then also some element of preference that people enjoy living in big cities and they don't want to commute, as Susan was saying. And so they're choosing to rent longer. But all those sort of factors together are definitely driving down home ownership for younger households.
Let's go to New London, Connecticut. Joy is on the line. Hi, Joy. You're on the air. Welcome to On Point.
Yeah, hi, Jane.
Hi.
So there's been a lot of talk about how great the housing market is and the great opportunities for sellers. But my husband and I live in New London, and we're in one of the maybe unusual parts of the country where the housing market isn't so great. We have a single-family home in an area of a lot of sort of multifamily rental properties. And I'm about to graduate from graduate school, and we're trying to relocate maybe to D.C. or somewhere a little bit further south. And so we really have the short end of the stick here in that our housing price isn't going up as quickly as the other parts of the country, so we're not going to be moving to a new area with that benefit of cash in hand to try and sort of make ourselves competitive buyers in that market. And then we're going to somewhere where there is a big demand, the job market is strong, and there's just not very much inventory. So I was wondering if there was any advice for somebody like me who is just sort of stuck in this position where we're not really benefiting from the high selling prices.
Got it, Joy. We'll tackle that on the other side of the break. I do appreciate your call. We are discussing the fastest real estate market we've seen in a decade in some places. Joy talks about another spot, but you can join the conversation. What's your strategy? I'm Jane Clayson, in for Tom Ashbrook. More after this break. This is On Point.
Support for On Point and the following message comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. When it comes to the big decision of choosing a mortgage lender, it's important to work with someone you can trust who has your best interests in mind. With Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence you need to make an informed decision. Skip the bank, skip the waiting, and go completely online at quickenloans.com/onpoint. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states. NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson in for Tom Ashbrook. We're talking about home buyers trying desperately to find anything affordable in this spring housing market. You can join the conversation. Realtors, what are you seeing out there? Sit tight, wait it out, get in there, whatever it takes. I'm speaking this hour with Wall Street Journal real estate reporter Laura Casisto and Susan Wachter, professor of real estate at the Wharton School. Here's a clip from the HGTV show House Hunters. Cameron and Katie are looking for a home in Ohio. They check out their first option.
Look how much maintenance there needs to be. I mean, the driveway needs done, this needs done.
But keep an open mind.
Okay.
Hey, good morning.
Morning, Cameron.
So what do we have?
Well, we have your ranch.
Yes, score.
And at $164,000, you have plenty of room to make
That's
this house.
That's not a bad price.
Why is it so cheap?
Yeah,
why it needs
so
some
cheap?
Updates.
Well, Joy asked before the break, Susan Wachter, about her situation. There she was with her husband. They want to relocate, but they're not going to be able to easily sell up in New London. I think that's where it was. They're not going to sell. They're not going to make a lot of money. And where they're going, they might be stuck. I mean, that's a circumstance, a scenario as well, Susan.
Yes, and Joy's not alone. In fact, there is recently been a rather historic shift for the United States. If you go back to get perspective on this, decades, the typical way that U.S. incomes have grown over time is moving from low opportunity, low income, low job growth states to high growth, high wage and high job growth states. And that mobility number has halved over the last four or five decades, so that recently, instead of having a mobility rate which takes households from low growth, such as Connecticut, to high growth areas, such as the Washington, D.C. metro area, that simply has changed, and it has potentially negative implications for equality going forward, because in the past, we've been able to move to where the job growth is, move to where the job opportunity is. But if that's precluded by high housing prices and high rents, that's a problem for overall mobility and overall wage improvement and job growth where the jobs are needed. So it's a bigger question. It's a question that affects individuals. It's a question that affects our nation as a whole.
You mentioned the issue of mobility. Here's Patrick from our website. He has a different perspective. He says, I'm single and I want to stay mobile, and I see a house as something that will slow me down if I need to pivot and make a quick move. I think an unspoken reality here may be that more and more people are living this way. Susan?
Well, that's true. We see more and more people renting. In fact, since 2006, the number of renters has increased more than 5 million, and the number of homeowners, actually, it's hard to believe this, has net not increased at all. And that's a reflection of house price increases. It's also a reflection of it's much harder to get a mortgage. Of course, we don't want to repeat the 2006 excessive reckless lending, but it's harder to get a mortgage than it was in 2000 for young households. Credit scores have to be impeccable. Credit record has to be impeccable. So, and of course, student debt, if you haven't graduated, is a real, real problem. If you've gotten those skills and higher wages, then it can be a net gain for sure. But getting into the rental market even is hard. We see all-time highs of young adults, millennials, living at home still.
Laura Casisto, I mean, some rents in some cities have flatlined. I'm looking at a piece in the New York Times here. Big cities, renters either can't or won't pay higher rents. So for the first time in years, tenants are renewing leases, with their idea in hand. They've got the upper hand.
Yeah, so this is a sort of interesting and subtle but really interesting distinction. So it's true. We have a glut of supply at the luxury end of the market. We're seeing rents go down for the first time in places like New York and San Francisco. But whether or not that makes the life of your average renter easier is a different question.
Right.
Sure, if you're living in a fantastic, beautiful $4,000 a month, one bedroom in downtown Brooklyn, you can definitely go to your landlord and say, hey, I'm not going to pay any more this year. But if you're living, if you're a sort of typical middle class household living in one of these older buildings, we're not building new stock at that part of the market. We're not seeing any new supply there. And we're seeing rents go up just as quickly. So we're really seeing this divide in the rental market now. It's great to be a high income renter, still not so great to be a middle or low income renter.
Let's get Katie in here from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Hi, Katie. You're on the air. Welcome to On Point.
Hi, Jane. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
This is more of just a comment rather than a question, but my husband and I are two physicians. We have a lot of student loan debt, specifically me, and we've been looking for a house for probably 2 years. Our constraints are that my husband felt pretty strongly about staying in Cambridge because he only is willing to either bike or walk to work because he feels that otherwise he might not see our son, our toddler. And so we put offers on seven places.
Seven?
Seven. And some were $100,000 to $200,000 over, which is so gross. I'm kind of embarrassed to say it out loud. None were accepted. And we finally got a place, actually, because we switched to a realtor who only does Cambridge. And as a result, we were able to find a place before it went on the market. But otherwise, and we're closing in 2 weeks. So otherwise, I don't think we would ever have found something because we couldn't really leave outside the city because of where he worked.
Katie, thank you so much for your story. Appreciate it. Here's Michael in Austin, Texas. Hi, Michael. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, Jane.
Hi.
I'm a first-time home buyer myself. I'm just kind of looking in the market, and I've heard that there are some sort of government programs that could help first-time mortgage applicants or those that are just entering the market. And I guess I'd like to hear what some of those options are that some people may not be aware of or if they are a good option for people.
Michael, thank you. Susan Wachter, what about government programs that may help first-time home buyers? Are there any?
Well, there are. And, you know, there's a plain vanilla program, VA, FHA, mortgages out there. And they are low down payment. You have to have a pretty good credit score today. But that's something you can work towards. And particularly if you're a veteran, there's wonderful mortgage programs out there for you. But in general, you know, the FHA VA programs are available and we're increasingly being used, and we see an increase in first-time homeowners using those programs. They absolutely should be looked into, and if it's a matter of repairing credit, then that is maybe difficult, but will be needed to be done and can be done over time.
Mm. Michael, thanks so much for the call. Laura Casisto, I have heard anecdotally, at least here in Boston, that foreign buyers are right at the front of the line to snatch up real estate as well. I mean, what do you know about that? I mean, I'm hearing cash offers, no contingencies. How does all that play in here as far as the foreign buyers coming into our market?
So that's definitely those anecdotes are for sure out there in places like Vancouver, Seattle, Boston is another big one, parts of the Bay Area. It's always a little tricky because there's not good data on it. So it's always a little tricky to know, are they just being used as a scapegoat or is that really a big part of the problem? I think for sure at the higher end of the market in those cities, that is an issue, mostly for the reason you said that they can pay all cash. And so why would a seller take someone who has to get financing over someone who can just throw down some cash? We're seeing some pullback there just because it's getting more difficult to get money out of China and that sort of thing. So there could be some relief in sight.
Let's go to Donna in Baltimore, Maryland. Hi, Donna. You're on the air. Thanks for waiting. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. So I kind of have a solution. Many years ago, actually, I was living in the New York City metropolitan area. My husband had student debt. He was a teacher. I was a lower-paid lawyer. And we said, we can't live here. We went city. We found three cities with lowering housing costs. We picked up. We moved to Baltimore. We bought a house for a sixth or seventh of what my friends in New York were paying. And we both got jobs. It was the best thing we ever did.
Mm.
And so my thought is, look for, you know, yes, I had to move away from my family. Yes, I had to take the bar exam again. But overall, it was a great move, and I encourage people to look for those lower-cost housing areas where there are jobs, and to, you know, to give it a shot, because otherwise people are facing exactly what your callers are facing.
Donna, thanks so much. Susan Wachter, would you respond to Donna there in Baltimore?
Well, you have skills that are transferable, as these folks have, and many do. That's absolutely an option. There are many, many markets, including Maryland, Baltimore, where there are jobs and there is housing. Housing is affordable, but it's just not where the job growth is, where the tech jobs are. Nonetheless, if you are able to be a teacher, a lawyer, and in fact, increasingly, I think people will be doing that. People who wish to settle down, who have families, and are looking for family-friendly neighborhoods which are affordable, they're going to create those neighborhoods by moving to these places, and particularly in cities that have been declining, that are revitalizing, like Baltimore.
Susan Wachter, how does a new administration play into all this? President Trump has made it clear he wants to roll back the post-crisis financial regulation laid out in Dodd-Frank. There's been talk that President Trump could return government-controlled mortgage companies, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, to private control. I mean, what's the impact of all of that moving forward on this housing market?
The crisis has played itself out in many ways, but in one way it has not, and that is in the resolution of Fannie and Freddie. And how that's resolved is really quite unknown. Right now it's back in Congress's hands, and we're probably not going to be taken up for a month. But nonetheless, it has to be taken up soon, within, let's say, a year, by next year. That's going to have impact. And in the immediate run, there's also the impact on interest rates. So when, around the same time that Fannie and Freddie were taken over by the federal government, we also had the Federal Reserve Board initiating its program QE, quantitative easing, by purchasing Fannie and Freddie mortgages, which helped keep those mortgage rates down. Well, we are getting very strong signals from the Fed that we're about to unwind that, and we need to unwind that. When that happens, mortgage rates will go up. So we are looking at a market that's difficult because housing prices are high, but it's helped by historically low interest rates. But those historically low interest rates are unlikely to persist in the long run, especially as the Fed unwinds its quantitative easing and starts selling trillions of dollars of mortgages that they currently have.
Laura Cosisto, Susan mentioned mortgage rates. I mean, talk about that for a minute. Interest rates are going up, if only slightly. Is that affecting all of this, affecting mortgage rates and lending?
So I think it's doing two things. I mean, one, whenever interest rates go up, it definitely pushes some people out of the market at the margins. If you were just barely scraping by and able to get into the market affording a mortgage, then it's going to push you out of the market. It has a bigger impact in high-cost markets like New York, San Francisco, Boston. In those places, even the amount that we've seen rates rise from about 3.5% to about 4.2%, that can be hundreds of dollars more on your mortgage payment, and that can be enough to push people out of the market. But there's also a bit of a pull factor where people also look at it and say, oh my goodness, rates are rising. They're probably going to keep rising. I should get in now. And so we also see some of that. I definitely also talk to people who are saying, like, I can still afford a house. I might not be able to for much longer, so I'm going to rush in. And that may also partly be accountable for what's making the spring selling season so frenzied right now.
Let's get Justin in here from Charlotte, North Carolina. Hi, Justin. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, Jane. My wife and I have actually had the opposite experience from what I've been hearing so far. We bought our first home in Portland, Oregon, in 2012.
Okay.
Right at the end of the economic downturn, and then we moved out to Charlotte when my wife got a promotion, and there was so much, so many homes for sale out here. We were looking at 10 homes a day, and we ended up with a very nice part of Charlotte, a three-bedroom home, you know, for $143,000. Mm. In Oregon, people are pitching tents. You can't even get a rental in Oregon. We're renting our house in Oregon right now. for $2,300, which is double our mortgage. And so, I mean, I don't know if we just got real lucky or what, but we've had nothing but good things from both the economic downturn and the rebound.
Justin, thank you. Yeah. I really appreciate your call. Laura Cusisto?
Yeah, that is. I actually wrote about that recently, and I looked at Zillow did some work looking at what are the best markets to find both a good job and an affordable house, right. And Charlotte was right up there.
Right.
So he made exactly the right move, because I guarantee you Portland is not on that list. Yeah. Portland's one of the tightest markets in the country right now. It's one of those markets where you're seeing price increases that are in the double digits, whereas Charlotte is a fantastic market to still be able to get a pretty good job, but also be able to get an affordable home. Chicago is another one of those. Austin is another one. So there are places where you can go and get lucky.
Laura, our last minute here. What does this market do to a buyer's psyche? And what would you say to them? Stick in there? Hold out? What's your best advice?
I had one realtor who I talked to who says she just gives people hugs. So that's that's one option. But yeah, I mean, I think stick with it. I think every year I say it's going to get better, and it gets tougher. And that's on the one hand depressing, but it's also a good reason to say just get in there. And you know, you talked to one person who said, "Ugh, we bought our house and we don't really like it." Also, don't do that. Don't buy a house as an investment. Don't buy a house because you feel like you have to. Buy it because it's something that you love and want to live in for a long time, and you can't go wrong.
Susan Wachter, I'll give you the last word here in our last 30 seconds. You said you don't see a bubble here. Look into your crystal ball. What do you see?
Well, I see opportunity and growth in the future, and I don't see declines in housing prices in the immediate future. And I do see if people found not only a house they love, but a place they want to live and love, it's always a time to buy, as long as we're not in a bubble, and we're not.
Mm. Well, great advice from both of you, and thanks to our callers today. Susan Wachter, real estate professor at the Wharton School. Appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Laura Cusisto, real estate reporter for the Wall Street Journal. Terrific piece yesterday. Laura, we'll be speaking with you again, I'm sure. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
And listeners, you can continue the conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website, On Point Radio. Follow us on Twitter and find us on Facebook. I'm Jane Clayson, and for Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. Thank you.